Welcome back to the Greg Hughes Podcast. Thank you so much for downloading. Today I'm joined by rally legend Gary Jennings for a conversation that is as harrowing as it's inspiring. It's a story of survival against all the odds. On May 25th, 2025, during the Cavan Stages rally, Gary and his co-driver Brian Hoy were involved in a high-speed collision that saw their Ford Fiesta Rally 2 leave the road and collide with trees. The impact was so severe that the car was reduced to a wreck, leaving both men trapped and critically injured. In the terrifying hour that followed, as emergency crews worked to cut them from the wreckage, Gary faced his own mortality. He shares with us his surreal, calm serenity experienced in the car, and the moment he was brought back to consciousness by the quick-thinking intervention of fellow racers who, defying reports from the scene that they were beyond help, stayed by their side and saved their lives. We walk through his grueling road to recovery, the profound physical and emotional toll of such a trauma, and the incredible willpower it took to return to the sport he loves. From attending last year's Donegal International Rally as a spectator while still navigating a long series of surgeries and rehabilitation, to now defying medical expectations to get back behind the wheel and compete this year, this is the story of a driver who has stared down the impossible. This is Gary Jennings. All right, my guest on the podcast this week is someone very familiar to rally fans and I suppose the general wider public, and that's Gary Jennings, a rally driver from Kesh in County Fermanagh. I kind of introduced you as from County Fermanagh, but it feels like you're from Donegal. I don't know why.
I think the wee village I'm from, Kesh, is very close to the border. Like it's only 4 miles from Pettigo, so yeah. We can kind of say both things. Yeah, we can say Donegal or Fermanagh, we're on the border.
We've a lot to talk about, but I want to go back to the 2025 Cavan Stages Rally, the worst crash you've ever had, May 25th, 2025. How lucky are we to be sitting here talking to you today?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, I think we're very, very lucky. Not only me, but also my co-pilot on the event, Brian Hoy. Yeah, I think the circumstances just all come into play that morning, and I think that's definitely the only reason why I'm still here.
How did that day start?
Yeah, that day started fine. In fact, we had done a rally the day before in Derry, and we were second in that rally, so we went down on the Sunday morning, and people might know, but we go to a briefing on the night before the rally, but because some of us were doing a rally on the Saturday, they had a special briefing for some of us on the Sunday morning, and I remember sitting there, the driver's briefing, and the doctors go through telling you what to do in the event of an accident. And I remember thinking to myself, why are we sitting here? I've listened to this hundreds of times before.
Is it like sort of when you're on the plane and they're telling you about the seatbelts
exactly
and all that stuff?
Right? What to do in an accident and how, if you come across somebody, to hold their head, and if they swallow their tongue, what to do and all this. And I was kind of bored, but I remember looking at the boys beside me, and it transpired then that they were the boys that turned up at the scene of the accident.
And I suppose it's logical, isn't it? Because other than like sort of stewards and the public, the next crew is probably going to be the first on scene.
Yeah, without a doubt. The crew that's going to come on you is definitely going to be the car behind you, or the second car behind you if they don't see you. So, yeah, that's your first medical team is your friends and the folks around you in the car. So, yeah, I think that morning was very poignant because, as I say, I was kind of bored and thinking, why am I here listening to this again? It's like sitting on the plane, reminding you all the time how to do things. But yeah, I think when it does hit home then, that's when it comes into force.
People often associate you with the Subaru, but you weren't in a Subaru that day or for that series.
No, that's right. Yeah, we'd changed some more modern machinery, a Ford Fiesta Rally 2. And to be honest, it was just a brand new car. That was the fifth rally, and we had been very successful. We had 3 wins in 2 seconds, so we were really on a high coming towards Donegal. And in fact, Cavan Stages was the final piece in the jigsaw before we've come to the main event, which was Donegal. Which, just very unfortunate that didn't happen then.
So, as much as you can determine, what happened? Why did the car leave the road?
I think that's probably a question I ask myself maybe twice a day. I think there's a number of factors. We're after having a dry spell of weather, and it had rained that morning, and the road was very, very tricky, a bit damp, a bit greasy. we had a lot of bumps on that certain bit of road, and I think the final factor was that it was lined with trees, you know, and you put all them together, if one thing goes wrong, it's very hard to get away with, you know.
Yeah, and I suppose at that speed, with there's such little actually on the ground between you and Brian and the whole car, there's such a little amount of stuff, rubber, in contact with the road at any one time. It's a miracle what yous do, but I suppose that amplifies any little thing that possibly can go wrong.
Yes, that's correct. You have the rubber, but then you have the weather conditions, which is the roads, the surface of the road, and then the unjanded bumps. So when you put them all together, it's like shaking a jar, you know, anything can come out. And usually, 9 out of 10, you can work with it. But yeah, unfortunately, I think the three things just come against us at that 1 second. And then we had absolutely no control. And that was it.
Following lots of tragedy that's happened in F1 and other in other sports, you know, where there's danger on the established courses, there's runoffs, there's tyres, there's all that type of stuff. I mean, rallying is raw, right? It's on often main roads that are close to traffic. The only thing you said to stop you is with trees.
Yeah, and I seen the trees coming. I think that's the big thing. You know, we when the car started to step out, I seen the trees and I knew we weren't bothered here. So I thought we'd get between the trees, but no, we just didn't get between them. Maybe at the end of it, we ended up hitting actually three trees. You know, hit one, broke the second one, and the third one was a daddy tree. It just stopped us. So yeah. Now trees are just, like we often say, on a road, if you hit another vehicle or if you hit something, there's a bit of movement.
There's a crumple too.
Yeah.
There's a crumple, yeah.
Tree, there's no giving a tree.
Do you know the way an elite rally driver like yourself has to think in sort of almost nanoseconds? You know, you're making decisions so quickly compared to, you know, what the job I do or what the job someone listening to this might do. I wonder, does that in a way allow you to take in more in those moments before you struck that tree or those trees?
Yeah. Funny you say that. You know, I had a bad brain shake, so I ended up seeing brain doctors as well and getting that all sorted out. But one thing did come out of it, that I suffer from severe ADHD.
Right.
So they found that because of this accident. But that is a factor, seemingly, of being a good driver. Because what you say is, we make decisions very, very sharply. We don't think about it. Now, some decisions can be rash decisions, but they're decisions we make very, very fast and don't think twice about it. So although we had this accident, the knock-on effect is we found out this and we have looked into it with the doctors, and this is a factor of the rally driving. You know, you make rash decisions, but you make decisions very, very fast.
Mm. So it'd be an interesting analysis into some of the best to see if they have these traces, this neurodivergence. Because it is, as many people listening or the family of those who are listening, some of these things are sort of seen as superpowers they're described as sometimes.
Yeah, it's strange because I would never have thought myself of being different than anybody else.
Mm.
But when I spoke to the neurosurgeons and the brain doctors and they spoke to me, they were intrigued about certain things that they do it and how they do it. And then once I mentioned them, the rally driving to them, they were like, yeah, the light bulb came off. They knew this. They know these matters of fact. There's just something there.
Before we started recording, you showed me some pictures of the vehicle. Now, this was before the jaws of life or anything were at it. The car was an absolute mangled mess. I remember after the crash, I can't remember who I was speaking to, but I mean, it was very, very touch and go. But you got out of that car, which is absolutely remarkable. Do you remember anything of being within the car, or as your brain protected yourself from that?
No, I remember. I remember a lot. I remember the impact, because I remember the sudden jolt of pain. And then I remember speaking to my navigator to see if he was all right. And Brian said to me, I'll not forget, he says, I broke a leg and broke my arm. And I remember saying to Brian, how do you know you broke your leg and broke your arm?
Yeah.
So he lifted his arm up, and that was it. I says, that's enough, Brian. I don't want to see your leg.
Wow.
So, yeah. But, that was the first. And I remember being in silence for a long, long time.
How confined was the space post-impact?
It was confined. I think when you see the photographs, the car was just completely squeezed. Mm. But I think that's the most of these modern cars. Mm. The crumple zones, the seats alone, the carbon fibre seats. The car actually broke the roll cage around the seats. They're that strong. So they protected us. The seats were the main thing that protected us in them cars. And like, I don't like talking about it, but just now when we see, but the seats in them new modern cars are £10,000 sterling each. And I was thinking, why would it be £10,000 sterling? But now I see why, because there's so much technology. Like the Formula One technology is all in them seats and them cars now.
Yeah. So I mean, obviously, listen, you both knew you were injured, and you knew probably it would take a time to get yourself out. There's a lot of petrol in these cars. There's a lot of other fluids in it, and we might talk about the antifreeze burn you got, which was just something people might not even consider it happening. Were you conscious enough, and I don't mean like awake, but just were you thinking about, could this car go up? What could happen next? Could we be trapped in the fireball here?
Yep. No, I don't think I got that long to think. If you can imagine, the car was lying face up. So I was lying on my back really in the car. And I wear a full face helmet, so it means you can't get out your face. But I remember then just going, I don't remember, but I gone completely out. I was gone for a long, long time. But I do remember hearing people saying, I do remember people saying, he's dead, he's dead, he's dead.
Wow.
So, but I remember I was unconscious then. And but it's weird, like it's like a weird sense, because even walking here today, this is going to sound very, very funny, but when I was lying in the car on my back, completely unconscious, I was so warm, I remember this, and I had no worry in the world. But I was lying, I don't like saying this, but I was lying in a sea, in the water, and it was like a bath. But the sky was a funny colour. But the sky was that colour. It was purple.
Purple, wow.
Completely purple. But I remember being so warm and not a worry in the world. Everything
content.
Was just content.
Yeah.
Complete contentment. And then I remember like waves hitting me.
Mm.
And the next thing I remember, opening my eyes, and Barry McNulty was in my face. In my face with his hand in my mouth. And they were shouting, you're shouting at me. And then opened my eyes. And I remember that. And Barry said to me, you're apt to have an accent. And I says, how bad? And I remember him, he says, Gary, very, very bad.
Wow.
Just you stay there.
I mean, I know he says, I don't know for what reason you don't want to talk about it, but out of curiosity, that what you were experiencing, is there any possibility that was somewhere between here and whatever's next? Or?
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. I've been to doctors. I've been to see about it. No, without a doubt, I am. And like, you never hear this. No, I was gone. Well, no, I was completely gone. That's one thing about me now. I'm so relieved to get a second chance. But it's funny, but sometimes you think about death and you think about what is at this. If it's anything I experienced, it was contentment. I was so content. I was so warm.
So you really feel you've had an insight into...
Yeah, without a doubt. And when I went to see doctors and speak about it, they asked me about a colour I seen. And I says, no, you tell me the colour you seen.
Yeah.
And they all said to me,
purple.
And this purple. And this is another funny thing. The day before I went to see the surgeon about this, and the woman that works with me, helps me through all this, that morning before I went to Jack Cassidy, JKC and Corian were so good to me, and they gave me an X5 down to drive when I went to hospital, because I had to sit up long. Broken legs and broken sternums. And I went that morning before I went to the hospital to JKC and Corian to look about a new X5. And I rang Jack Cassidy and says, Jack, by any chance, would you have a purple X5? Now, I mean a purple, this colour.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And wonder what he said to me.
Just one in stock?
I have one in the showroom here.
Oh, my word.
So I went and looked at this X5 in bright purple.
Yeah.
And then went to the doctor and spoke to the neurosurgeon and spoke to this woman that works for me, a very, very good woman, Lisa. And they told me about the purple. And that's, I never told anybody, but they were correct. Purple was the colour.
That's unbelievable, isn't it? And... Your injuries were incredibly, incredibly severe. Broken leg, fractured sternum, broken ribs, a broken wrist, a severe concussion, blood in your lung, friction burn injuries. You know, not to mention surviving the actual impact in and of itself, you know, that absolute shock, because I think that can kill.
Yeah.
You know, and it can be the most, it can be, sometimes you'll see collisions where people appear completely uninjured, and it's just the way it goes. So, I mean, what was your prognosis by the time you got to the hospital? I mean, did they think you had a chance? Would you be, you know, in a vegetative state? I don't know. What was the opinions at the time?
Yeah, I know they were very, very worried, because the doctors were in the car with me, because I was trapped for over an hour.
So they were trying to get you stable in there?
Get me stable in the car, and then they had to get the roof, take the whole roof of the car to get me out. And I do know that, I remember listening, I remember Declan Boyle from McCaffrey's Bars taking charge of that, taking the roof of the car, him and Cahill McCourt. So once I got the roof off, they had me on these pens and stuff to stabilise me. But I remember in the ambulance there was a lot of fussing going on in the ambulance, so I knew the thing wasn't good. I remember the journey in because they told me there was only 5 miles from the hospital. But I do remember when I came out of the ambulance, the crowd at the hospital, but I didn't realise there were so many other people injured that day on the first pass of the stages. Unfortunately, a fella had hit the same tree and broke his back. It wasn't until I woke up in the hospital 2 days later that I realised this. But I remember the crowd of people in the hospital, competitors, who all had come to the hospital to see where we were there, you know. And I know Dactyl and all them boys, they come in the ambulance, and they were all in the hospital and I got there. But yeah, they were very worried, I think, for probably 24 hours. But yeah, but I kept complaining about a burn on my leg, even when I was in the car. And they were just saying, look, it's a friction burn. And that's the most pain I had, was my leg and my broken sternum. It did hurt me now. It was still to this day, but bones will fix.
I think too, what was happening there at that time is they're effectively saying, look, if your leg is all we have to worry about, son, you know what I mean?
That is exactly right.
It's the only thing you could feel, but it's the stuff that you're not crying about that's the bother, isn't it?
That is correct. That's what they said to me. If you're only worried about your leg, it's okay. Mm. But I remember waking up then in a private room and coming to my senses and thinking, Brian's not here. So I thought, I have to get to Brian. So I remember freaking my legs out, and I was all attached up to all these things, and I got 3 steps and I went down on the floor. Right. Tried to know my legs were broke.
Yeah.
And they all come running, and then that's when they realised that I was coming. I came round, and that was that night. So I got back to my senses then, and obviously the stuff was wearing off, whatever they put under me. But then, from then on, it was just a matter of getting recovered to get out of there then.
Brian suffered quite serious injuries, as you've already mentioned. How long was his recovery? I mean, I presume it's up to some extent, and I think in the head the recovery is ongoing, but, you know, his physical recovery.
Yeah, well, I talked to Brian there, you know, once a week. But, yeah, Brian's a young fella, he's very, very fit. But, Brian went to Dublin, and then, as my way of saying, he ended a juice coma to get all his bits sorted out. But I didn't realise this whenever I was in hospital, but then when they went and took him back out of a coma, I think it was a bit more severe than they thought. So I think he was probably a week coming back out of a coma then, longer than it taken. But as Brian says himself, at least when he came out of a coma, he was fixed.
Yes.
You know, he did all his bones fixed, did all his stuff fixed together. But yeah, hopefully Brian's...
So this leg injury that you have, and you showed me there before you came on, with everything that happened, it's almost kind of bizarre, isn't it? Because the antifreeze, obviously, whichever way the car ended up, leaked out and it was just dripping onto your leg, and it's effectively a burn you have, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, obviously, I went through my fire retardant suit, my fire retardant underwear, and I had a pair of ski socks on that day because it was so wet, so it had cold feet. So we went through all them layers, but yeah, it's just the new Fiesta had a heater element that runs across the dash, and obviously when I was lying on my back, the hot water, it had bust, everything in the car had bust, and it was just dripping onto my shin.
Oh, so it's actually water that's the burn,
is it? Antifreeze with water, yeah.
Rhythmics with the water.
Then when it's at that temperature, it just dripped and stood into the bone. It actually went into my leg, it hit my bone. But my accident was in May, and this didn't come to light till the start of July, because I was actually at the rally last year, thinking everything was okay, but I'd broken leg and sternums and stuff, but I never feel in my foot. And then when I went to Alton McGallivan to get me cast off, they said, that's you, you're ready to go, your leg's fixed. And I'm saying, I can't feel my foot. And then they said, no, well, your leg's fine. And then actually a wee female nurse from Newton Stewart, I was Noma, and getting the dressing chains, and she said to me, I don't like the look of your leg. You know, this was a Friday evening.
Yeah.
And she says, what are you doing now? I says, nah. And she says, can you go to the Royal in Belfast? So that was Friday evening, and 7:30 Monday morning, I was on the table getting this antifreeze cut out of my leg.
Because it looked like sepsis, the pictures you showed me of what I imagine it to be. I'm no doctor. And, you know, when you're considering it was cutting through the skin to the bone, it's kind of remarkable that you actually have movement in your foot if you really think about it, because, you know, you imagine the calf and there's tendons and all muscle and all running down, but obviously the top of the leg took the brunt of it.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I think if anybody sees it, I have about 15 mil of me off the top of my shin missing. You know, I have no flesh over me bone now, but it's really the back of the leg is your muscle, so it wasn't so bad that way. It looks a lot worse than it is. But yeah, it does get sore when I'm out driving and clutching and stuff, so I just have to look after it. So, but look, these modern rally cars, when you get them into first gear, you don't have to clutch again, so hopefully it'll be okay for the weekend.
How are you physically now? What's the hangover of the crash physically?
I think physically I'm still sore. I will be. But I think mentally I have to get over it. I think your head rules your body. So
have you got into a rally car competitively since?
I haven't sat in a rally car yet. And today is Monday.
Yeah. We're recording this on Monday with the rally kicking off later this week. But, you know, with everything that's happened to you, why get into a rally car again?
Because it's what I live for. I don't drink, just social events. I don't smoke. I work 7 days and
don't drink
nights.
Tea or coffee either, by the way. We learnt that, yeah.
And I work 7 days and seven nights. Whatever business I have, I work there all the time. But what do I do it for? And when it boils down to it, this is what I do it for.
Who did you have to have that conversation with, though, about getting back into the car?
Well, I had several. A girl, Lisa, works with me mentally and physically, who's very, very good.
She'll leave that decision to you, will she?
100%.
But did she give you any guidance? Because I suppose she's working with your mind.
She did.
Because you have to drill down as to why you're doing this, right? Are you doing this? Are you doing this to prove something to yourself? Are you doing this because you really love it and you want to get back to it? You know, there's many reasons why. So I would imagine part of her job is to find out, well, why is Gary looking to get back into that car? Is it for the right reason?
Yes, without doubt. And I think the very first day that I met her, we had all these conversations and she was very positive. She says, you will and you will and you will. And that always stuck in my head.
Yeah.
Because the doctors actually told me I won't.
Mm.
But the mind overcomes the body. And I am 100% sure that I'm going to do it. And I will do it till my best ability. Will I be competitive again? No. I've been out for a year. But this time next year, I hope to be in a different frame of mind and be fit to competitive. Because, as I explained before, you only have a window here.
Yeah.
And you've so long to get to the window. You're only so long in that window. And then you're out of that window. And I just like being in that window and being competitive.
You can't look back with regrets with what you've been through. Because, you know, people might say, well, you'd be mad to get back in a car. We shouldn't even be here.
Well,
so you'd almost be mad not to live your life responsibly, but you know what I mean.
100%. And please don't take this the wrong way. Of all the people that I know in this sport who tragically have left us, not one of them has had an accident like that there. It's on, you know, and I know we think about Manus. I stopped up at his memorial garden yesterday. Like, his was just such a small accident and just the circumstances of it.
And
Craig Breen's the same. Yeah. And, you know, for them families probably to see what I've gone through, and really I've survived with a bad leg, and you know the cars that them poor people passed away on, there was nothing compared to what I have. So I'm very grateful for that, and there's not a day I don't think about people that aren't getting a second opportunity. But when I get the second opportunity, I'm going to definitely make the best of it.
You guys have something in common though, and you also go in with your eyes wide open. You know the risk. It's an inherent risk. It's the same as a jump jockey
100%.
Or anyone involved in sport. You hope it's not you, or a downhill skier. To pick your sport, you hope it's not you. But there is an acceptance, is there? There's an acceptance that you know, that you could be, you know, killed or very seriously injured. As it turns out, you were seriously injured. Great to see you doing so well. But you all know.
Look, I think everybody in life thinks about that. There's not a day you don't think about what could happen or what will happen. But we have no say over that. You know, we have to make the best of the time we have here. Rallying is a funny sport. And I do say to people, we don't hear about how many footballers break a leg or break an arm, or rugby players who are paralysed playing the football or rugby.
Well, the brain injuries, the connection with Alzheimer's,
You take all the rallies over Europe, there's not somebody injured every week. You know, it's a very, for compared to what we do, there's a very less chance of getting injured.
Well,
or seriously injured.
Most intercounty footballers' knees and hips are banjacked to 40, like so.
That's right.
Yeah, because it's so controlled, it's so safe. I mean, the safety of that car. Now, if this was 30 years ago, or maybe even 20 years ago, listen, forget about it, right? But between the seats, the strapping, everything else, you know, that's why you're here.
Yeah.
And a dose of luck.
Yeah, and we have spoken in depth with Malcolm Wilson, who owns Ford M Sport in Cumbria, And we sat over dinner and spoke about this car and spoke about the way it's broken and about all these things. That's what them cars are designed to do.
Mm.
When people look at this car and they say, that cage is broken 5 bits.
Yeah.
But when they sit down and look at it, that's the way it's supposed
that's
to be.
That's the crumple zones we'd see on the road cars, yeah. Wouldn't we?
And it does what it says on the tin. And, like, see, for anybody, young people joining the sport, I think it's the safest sport you'll get compared to what we do, compared to anything else.
What I can't get my head around, though, as we record this a few days out from the rally, is that you're talking about getting back into the car now and you know what, maybe being competitive next year, but you haven't sat in a rally car since. So that make sense.
Not, I haven't even sat in
it. Is that a choice? Like, are you waiting on the car to be delivered or what?
I have had a lot of opportunities. We know Chris Meek did this test a few weeks ago and I was invited down to that, and my friend Conor McCross from KAS has a car sitting there ready to go, and they've told me to come down, get in the car. But no, I am just happy to get in my own car.
Right.
My only problem is my broken sternum. When I put my hands device on, it probably will be in pain, but the doctors are very good to me. I'm getting a steroid injection tomorrow, which does help me because I get them. So I will drive within my capability.
Correct, yeah.
Answer. Mm. And I don't put anybody at risk. If I feel that I'm sore or it's not happening, it's not.
Can you trust yourself to make that
I can
shot?
Respect myself to pull out.
Yeah.
I can go in and say, here, I'm too sore or I can't do this. I have no problem. I'll just pull out.
But you don't really know yet the effects of the G-force.
No, none of that. Mm. Like, if I sneeze or cough sitting here now, I'd have to hold myself.
Yeah.
So when I go to break into one of them chicanes, how's my body going to react? Mm. My mind knows what to do, but I don't know what my body's going to do.
To some extent, I imagine, to keep you focused when you're racing like you're racing, there has to be a combination of concentration or maybe fear, survival. I don't know. You can tell me. You're the pro. How do you know that the fear or the concern that this could happen again won't affect how you perform?
Because my mind won't let me. My mind won't let me think about that.
Yeah.
I've had one accident in 30 years. You know, I have never been hurt. I have never been in an ambulance before. Ambulance, surely. I've been in an ambulance when I was out water skiing. I've been in an ambulance because I was farming. But this is a high sport, and I have never been unfortunate enough to have an accident. My mind, I'm saying this now. My mind will not think about that. I'm just focused and enjoying myself.
Great. And I hope it doesn't come across like I'm trying to plant these seeds here.
No.
It's just interesting, and it's an interesting insight into you and who you are and how you, you know, compartmentalize things. And we have to. Was the people around you trying to talk it out, or do they know who you are? And I'm not on about Lisa.
No, 100%. I've had this conversation with my mum and dad.
Yeah.
Who are very fortunate, are still with me, and I love them so much. But they have said to me, not to do it, but I can't. I think, it's a funny way to think. It's like
saying, don't be you.
That's right.
This is who you are, right?
This is who I am. Yeah. And, Lisa has told me before, Lisa spoke to me, I've got away with it.
Mm.
It'll not happen to me again. I will not step outside that comfort zone. I'll enjoy myself and I'll put a show on for the fans who are so, so good to me. I think the message I got in hospital, and I'm only seeing their message now because they're sending me a message now, good luck for this rally. And then I'm only seeing that they were messaging me when I was in hospital. But like, I was in morphine for 7 months, and I was in the Royal every Monday morning at 9 o'clock, and every other day I was in the hospital in Oma. So I had that much going on. I was replying to the message, but really I didn't understand.
You were in co-pilot. I was autopilot.
So like, I appreciate everybody's help and everybody's support, and I'm just glad to see that so many people are happy to see me back, as well as how happy I'm going to feel to be back.
You had known how popular you were, you know, with the crowds that you gathered, and, you know, you're such a big name in the sport and an icon up here. Did you realise how much people cared, though, before the crash?
No, I don't think I did. I realised definitely very, very, very quick after the accident. I think the amount of people that came to see me, no matter what hospital I was in, they made time fly past, and I appreciate every one of them. And like, even the messages on the phone from ministers, from the two Johnnies, from all these people, you know, Martin McHugh, all these people are all, you know, Mark McHugh, all these people from around here messaged me, and I think it was great to get that. And I think when something like this happens, you know who your three friends are, and it's great to have that support.
Brilliant. What car are you in?
This is a funny, I'm back in the same car.
The actual same car.
No, it's not the same car.
Is there any element of the old car in it? No, it's course. That's destroyed.
No, well, I think we have a back shafts in the back diff.
Yeah,
well, the sponsor has been very good in the owner of the car, so they're putting it together for me. And it's a big thank you to M-Sport and Ford for seeing what we were doing with this car. And they have just told my sponsors and the team to get the car ready. And they're sending over all the bits, and we'll sort it out after the rally, which is great, you know, to get the car out there. And Ryan McHugh and the boys in Frosses, who's building the car looking after it, are first class. And Ryan Lochran, whose car it is, and for his support as well. So, yeah, no, it's great the way these people all come together, and especially, I don't think any other rally would have this support and people pulling together to get you out. I think if I said I was coming to another rally, there'd be nothing thought about it. But the fact that you're coming to the main event, the biggest one of the year, pulled them all together.
What I can't figure out is what you're going to do during the rally, because it's almost like you're a jockey and you're going to, you know, pull the horse back. Is that, can you do that? Like, this is like, you know, when you're imagining things about before it happens. When you get in that car and strap yourself in, and even if you've got that pain, there's only one Gary Jennings, isn't there? And that's just flat to the mat.
Yeah, well, everybody's saying that, but look, I'm going to enjoy myself, I think.
Yeah.
Any other year, there's too much pressure on me. Yes, but this year, we're completely out for enjoyment.
Yeah.
And if I can make that finish ramp on Mount Errigal on Sunday, I'll be an emotional wreck, because this is what we built up for all year.
Yes, and I'll tell you what that will be. It won't be just finishing the Donegal International Rally. I think it'll be something incredibly significant for you, from effectively probably should be dead to finishing, you know, even with elements of the car that you was crashed, to actually finish the top event as many of us see it on the calendar. That's almost like a circle of life moment, isn't it? It's even bigger than the sport.
Yeah, I think you have to do these things in life.
Yeah.
You know, you can't lie down and beat your head ahead of yourself and what could have been. You have to go and make it what it can be. And, without a doubt, I always told the doctors when I was lying in the Royal in July last year, and they were saying about my leg and how bad it was, and, you know, it's never going to be right. And I'm saying, it's only my left leg. It's only for clutching. Mm. They were laughing. And I can't wait to...
This positive mental attitude you have, this sort of can-do attitude, this attitude of defiance in a positive way, has this always been your character, or has this come from your experience?
It's always in my character, but I didn't know why. But when I have been through so much and spoke to too many doctors, and to be diagnosed, you know, with, as I call it, ACDC, you know, I never heard of this, but to be diagnosed with it has put my mental capacity into the proper frame of mind.
Does this also make a little bit of sense with school, friendships, studying, concentration, things you're interested in? Did this sort of accidentally make things an awful lot of sense looking back on your life?
100%.
Yeah.
Because I remember my mum and dad coming home from the primary school meetings, and my results were pathetic.
Yeah.
But I remember my mother and father not being too cross with me, because the headmaster always said, he doesn't put effort in, but he'll always be successful. But they didn't know, and I didn't know what they meant. But now, after this happened to me, they realise, and I realise, what they actually mean.
Yeah, but you've got good parents there, because... they could have thought you were bold, you were naughty, you were lacking concentration, you just weren't interested, you know. So it's great that they gave you that space to be who you are.
Yes, 100%. But I was never bold. I might have been naughty, but I was just... But I was never bold. I just done everything a wee bit different than anybody else.
Yeah,
simple things like mathematics, I would do it a completely different way. Yeah. The teacher was telling us. I would spell words wild funny, but the words, the way I spelt them, I could pronounce them to make... So if they were saying that's the wrong way to spell a word, I say,
it's fine to me, I can read it.
You speak it out, A, B, and it worked for me. So it's just funny how later in life now that we found out this is actually what was wrong.
Yeah.
And it's actually not a bad thing. And I think to be on the spectrum, as I say, isn't bad.
No.
It just means you are a wee bit different. And now when we know what is actually wrong, it's great, because you can just concentrate on what you want to do, and you can break things up into sections and just go through them as simple as that instead of trying to do everything at once.
This moment of warmth in the sea, looking up at the purple sky, do you connect that to spirituality?
I don't know about spirituality.
Or religion is really what I'm kind of getting at, or...
I want to say something again as well. I'm not afraid of death anymore.
Yeah.
Do you know the way sometimes you think what happens?
Oh, 100%, death?
That hasn't crossed my mind since. And it's very hard for me to say that. But I was so content. And I will never, ever forget that feeling. And my spine's actually tingling, thinking about it.
Yeah.
That feeling I had until they woke me up. And then when they woke me up, it was life again. It was buzz again. And everything was going on. But for that, whatever, I don't know, it felt like a few minutes. It could have been seconds. It was just completely different.
Serenity, like.
Yep.
Who's, Brian's not on board with you, is he?
No, Brian's not on board. It's a young fella, Darren Mullen from Sligo. So he's actually a long-time sponsor of mine, Andrew Mullen, Sligo Palace's son. And yeah, no, I rang Andrew to ask would it be okay if I rang his son to sit. And he was, no, definitely 100%. He says, in fact, I will ring my son and tell him that he's sitting with you. So, look, great young fella. He's an up-and-coming navigator. And, yeah, we're going to enjoy ourselves.
The way you talk about rallying and your love of it and wanting to do it with, and you were sort of saying, you know, well, what else would I do? And blah, you'd be forgiven for thinking you don't do anything, right? But before the accident, and I'm sure you're getting back in it, I mean, you've got your finger in so many pies. I mean, you are 24/7, 7 days a week, aren't you?
Yeah, without a doubt. But that's the way I've been all my life. You know, we have an oil business. I have...
Hasn't been a fantastic year. People thinking you're screwing
that's
them.
That's it. We have haulage lorries.
Yeah.
Doing general haulage. So the price of the diesel, we're getting it... Either way, we're getting hammered. I have a pub. I have a restaurant. I'm into renewable energy with windmills, property, and, a farm as well, just to sum it all off. So, yeah, if I wasn't going 24/7... I don't know what to do.
Let's talk a wee bit about the rally now. It's your favourite event, I take it. Why? What makes it so special?
The people. 100%.
Really?
It's all about the people. You can take this rally anywhere in Europe and it wouldn't be the same without the people. And I went to watch it last year, even though it was full of morphine, but the people were so good and letting you in to watch the stages and so, with that flamboyance, out watching. And to see all them cars going past and everybody builds reaction. And it's the best free sport in the world.
Mm.
If you take it, we don't get paid.
Yeah.
And people realise this. I have asked many times, what is the prize money for winning Donegal? There is no prize money. It's just the feeling that we get from doing it.
Yeah.
And the spectators can watch it for nothing.
Yeah.
It's the best free sport in the world.
Yeah.
It's better than Wimbledon. It's better than Wembley. It's better than any Formula One, I think. But people can go and watch it for nothing and just enjoy it. And the carnival atmosphere right in them fields when the cars go past.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And your favourite stage of the rally? I know they mix it up a little bit and, you know, people say they're Atlantic driver, this, that and done. But is there anything in your career of the Donegal rally that makes a particular part of it special to you?
Yes, without a doubt. And I don't touch on this too much, but the first year I won the Donegal rally, Neil Doherty was sitting with me.
Yeah.
And he's from Glen. And we'd done the Glen stage, and Neil's father was actually in hospital, passing away that weekend. So Glen has always been my favourite stage since, because we won that rally, come off into Mount Errigal, and we got a guard escort to the hospital. And I was never as proud to walk in to the hospital with that trophy and giving it to Neil Doherty's father, and then he passed away the following week. And I think for that, Glen will always be indebted in my heart.
If anyone thought you were a hard man, you haven't done much in this chat to back that up. You're an emotional guy, yeah?
I'm probably the softest person you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
But it's getting in under my skin, and it can go two ways.
Yeah. Like you've got two sides. You've got teeth, but...
Yeah. But I would never... I'm very soft. I would never see anybody stuck for anything. I would do without myself before I would let anybody else do without. And I think... I think that can be taken both ways, but it's very hard to speak about some things, but I think the way to get through life is to speak about things, and, you know, if one person can speak to another person, even about the circumstances I've been through, it can help somebody, because it's a big dark world out there, and I think we need to talk and speak to each other, and If we can speak to each other, we can get through anything.
Yeah, and I'm at an age, and you're heading towards it. You've got some time to go yet too. In this country, we talk an awful lot about like men's mental health, and we often quite rightly talk about men's mental health as it affects young men and teenagers. But there's something particular as people sort of head, you know, 35 on into their 50s here. You know, I get the missing persons that come through from the guards. And thankfully, if it's 16, 15, 17, 18, 3 hours later, you get an email saying, you know, missing person found. But see, sometimes it comes through 47-year-old guy. Yeah. Like I'd turn to my other half and go, God help this fella. Yeah. And so often the update is found deceased. I don't know. So, you know, my point is that, and there's a lot of other podcasts talk about this, right? It's so freaking important to talk and chat and see the light that's out there. Like,
yes, 100%. I think we've a young girl missing at the minute up beside us. She's from Tyrone, but she's missing up in Castle Arsdale, beside my home village. And I know her thoughts are with them, and that church is going on a week now. But and that girl did speak to people because I hear ones in my office talking about her, how good she was. But it just takes something to flick that switch. And you know, as I say, if we can keep a light on in that room, that doesn't be in darkness and they don't have to flick that switch. It's so, so simple to speak to people. And I must thank Lisa, who I go to, because that's someone who I spoke to after my accident. And you can take things always different ways, you know. You can lie down and forget about it, or you can go back and go harder. We're coming back. Are we going to go harder? I don't know, but I'm so glad to come back.
It's an amazing story. And this is an you've taken the pressure off yourself. Donegal this year is an experience. It's a journey. It's perhaps part of your journey of recovery. Who's to say how competitive you'll be? I can't see you coming up, bringing up the rear. But anyway, the plan is to get back to competitive rally action. That's what you're going
to
do.
Yes, that's what I want to do. I know I haven't done anything in 14 months, so I haven't even sat in the car yet. But
still getting my head around that.
Yeah. I when I get the harnesses on, I know I'm going to have to just pull back a wee bit. But it's a simple thing. M Sport asked me, you know, what spares you want over. I said, just send me some tail lamps, because I intend to just be sliding about and enjoying myself. And if I can make somebody else smile half as much as I'm smiling inside the car, I'll make somebody's day.
Yeah, exactly. And I suppose you keep the race at its place, isn't it? Watch the professionals at it. Thankfully, the real fans of the Donegal International Rally know all of this, and they're respectful of landowners and all that type of stuff. And I don't want to be too critical of young people either, really, because I'm not a big fan of that. But there is, and they're predominantly young, you know, a crowd that come up to Donegal because the rally's on. Not necessarily to see the rally, and they love their cars, but obviously it can be disruptive, and we hope they're all safe. But as I say, I just can't find myself, you know, crapping on them, really, you know, because I was young once myself, and you know, a lot of them don't drink, they don't do drugs, everything's just about the car. Like,
I think that's the point you did say. We were all young once, you know, and I think, and that's a small minority of the people. Just remember, the people make this rally.
Yeah,
when you see the crowds coming into Letterkenny from Thursday night on, that's what makes the hairs in the back of your neck stand. There's nowhere else you'll go in Europe and you'll see these crowds. And when they line them stages and they're wagging their caps and they're clapping your own. So that's a small minority. And to be fair, with King of the Cone down here, very well organised, Beyond Core, and it's done right. And that's okay. That's what they want to do. Let them do it over there. But we don't want to tarnish a rally.
Yeah.
And we want them to be safe on the roads, leave the race in this place. And I think this last number of years now, it has done that.
Yeah, I think you're right there. And funny, they would say, you know, I think I have a feeling there's going to be a few. I mean, there's always a number of winners of the Donegal International Rally, but in terms of the overall winners, I think there's going to be at least two, whoever actually wins it. And if you get over the finish line yourself, that's you'll have won in your mind, surely. It'll have to be one of your greatest Donegal International Rally wins, finishing it with everything you've went through.
Yeah, if I can, you know, to maybe prove the doctors wrong in the Royal in Belfast as well when they looked at my leg. But look, the fact that I have everybody behind me, I'm so, so supportive, and I'm so grateful for getting a second chance, and I'm so, so grateful for all them people that's helped me, you know, from on the scene with the boys that helped me out of the car, you know, Declan Boyle, I'm getting emotional now. Declan Boyle, Paddy McRudden, Barry McNulty, and Cahill McCourt, only for them boys, I wouldn't be here, and I'm so grateful.
What is it makes you emotional about it? Is that their impact they had on you?
I think, really, I couldn't have had four better boys there behind me. And I didn't panic, I was in the car, because I knew the four boys were there. They would trust me with their life, and I trusted my life with them boys, because I knew that I was in safe hands when them four people were there in that car. Mm. And I'll never forget waking up and Barry McNulty staring in my face. And I think only I breathed, he was going to actually give me a kiss of life. So I think, number one, I didn't want to kiss a life from Barry McNulty.
No harm to you, Barry.
But number two, just to have them people there at that most critical time in your
life.
They
weren't going to give up on you.
No, and I wouldn't give up on them, and they know that. And they were told not to come down. They said that I was gone, and no, they were.
Say that again, sorry. Because I know you might have mentioned that at the beginning, but I thought maybe you were mentioning it casually, like, or that you were of the feeling. So a determination was made, not necessarily by medical people per se, but a determination was made that there's no point going down there, lads, those lads that you mentioned, because you were already gone.
Yeah, 100%.
So your vital signs must have been so weak then.
I think they looked in and seen us, we were out, and they heard Brian then moaning, so that was right, but as far as they were concerned, I was gone. Mm. And they walked to me, and they walked to me, until they got me back round again. And then it was a matter of not giving up till the medical team got to me. And then, as I said, I was trapped in the car for an hour. And I think an hour of lying on your back, kind of upside down, and the blood was running to your head and everything. When I got out of the car then, it was just, I don't remember much, because they worked very, very hard, and they pumped all the stuff into my veins, and they gave me the magic whistle. Remember that?
What's that?
It's a thing, a magic pen, it's a thing you suck on.
Yeah.
I must find out what it is, because it actually spaced me out completely. It's like a morphine pen.
Oh, wow, okay, yeah. It blasts you with whatever is required to take the pain away.
You shook on this magic pen. But, so grateful for all the emergency services, all the doctors, and I say, all the crews in Cavan Hospital, Ellis Gillen, Oma, Alton McGelvin, and especially the Royal. And I think it's not that something like this happens, that you're so grateful for the medical team that we have here in Ireland.
Mm.
You can't divide the medical team up, because the whole of Ireland medical team looked after me. And yeah, they had great cross-border correspondence from doctors north and south. And I think that's what definitely has left me where I am.
And it's a story of, you know, your toughness and your resilience and look, that the right people were around you, your proximity to a hospital. I know you were in the car for an hour, but they say every second counts. If it was another 45 minutes in a helicopter or something, you know. I think luck actually probably does the professionals a disservice in relation to that. But, you know, as catastrophic as it was, things went in your way as well, or went your way as well, bizarrely.
Yeah, that's right. It's either for you or it's not for you. You're one or the other. Yeah, everything just, although the circumstances of my accident, all the things come together in the wrong way, I think when I had my accident, then all things have to come together the right way.
And right back to the start as we wrap up, you won't ever know what actually caused this. Do you need to know? Is it something that bothers you? Is it the final piece of the jigsaw, or can you move past that?
It does bother me. We've had the conversations with the team. We all have different opinions. I do have the opinion that the car broke a back arm, because I had hit the back left-hand wheel very hard at the rally the weekend before, but hairline cracks you can't see.
Yeah.
So it's not my team's fault, it's nobody's fault, but I do think it broke a back arm at that time, and it was the wrong time, at the wrong place at the wrong time, because if that happened, the road was greasy and we had bumps, I was in trouble.
And then you have to factor in on top of that, at least one other car went off in the same spot, didn't it?
That's right,
and they were injured. So I think it's what's going to happen. This is going to come down to just, you'll never get a true answer, but it's certainly a combination of events that led to where we're at.
No one thing will ever lead to an accident like that. It's a combination of a number of things. And it's the same as saying how I survived. It was no one thing how I survived. It was a combination of everything happened at the right time.
I can't remember what event we were at, but someone shook their head as if to say, he's finished that book. And I don't even think they were finished. They were on about you being finished in rally. I think they meant finished full stop. But here you are. You're not finished. You're taking part in the rally in a few days. And I know it's all the better for having you back, because real Donegal fans real rally fans, sorry, particularly your Donegal fans, because as I say, it's like you're from here, really. It's, you know, you're an absolute hero to them, and it's just going to make it so special for them, and it's just amazing for you, but for the rally and for the fans that you're able to actually do this.
Yeah, definitely. And I say I have three young children at home, three girls, and I think they realise as well how much it means to me to come here. And
well, I kind of got the sense that was a little bit maybe where you didn't want to go down, so I've kind of avoided that. We don't have to go down at this stage, You know, you're still looking for support.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you say, I have to do this, but people have to support you to do it too. 100%. You know,
I think that's a choice you have to make. And remember, you don't have to do anything in this world.
Yeah.
You know, but I have three young girls there, and I think I've learned one thing. They're very, very proud of their daddy. So it's very important for them to see me pulling through as well.
Well, you're Superman now. We're Superman to our kids anyway, but now you're indestructible.
Yeah, and like my children's all into sports. Jessica, my eldest girl, is a show jumper. My smallest girl, she actually races bikes, mountain bikes.
Oh, wow. What age is she?
She's 9. So she races cross country.
No fear in any, is there? No fear, I know.
And my middle year nanny, she's just the opposite. She's just a chilled out, dog-loving sausage dog she has. So, the unfortunate thing was, on Cavan Stages last year was the first rally that my middle daughter Annie was ever at.
Oh, no, right.
So she was standing in service when the phone call came through.
Yeah.
And they had to go home.
She's probably the softest of the three of them too, is she?
Yeah. She was very sick when she was young. She had meningitis. So she was travelling home in Cavan not knowing whether her daddy would survive. So I think it's very important to have them here this weekend to share this experience with me, and just to show that sometimes fairy tales do work.
Exactly. Listen, Gary, thank you so much for chatting to us and just giving us a wee bit more of an insight. And I know you're not a closed book, but a wee bit more of an insight into the incredible journey you've been on. It's fantastic, as I said, to have you back. The fans are delighted. I'm sure you're going to get some welcome and off your competitors, if I could put it to you like that, as well, because these are a family. It's hugely competitive, but yous all look out for each other too, as that's been demonstrated. And it's just amazing. It's amazing that you're sitting here, and we really, really appreciate you coming up for a chat.
Thank you much, and thank you very for the support.
And a big thanks once again to Gary Jennings for such an open, frank conversation. And that was this week's Greg Hughes podcast. If you enjoyed it, please share it wherever you got it. The more people get their ears around it, the better. And don't forget, we release new episodes every Friday morning at 11 a.m. If you want to get in contact with the podcast, the researcher and producer is Caroline Orr. You can email her with your comments, your suggestions, to CarolineOrr@HighlandRadio.com. But we'll be back really soon with another episode. Until then, look after yourself.